in the middle, I guess. Welcome to the first day of this sitting by this panel. I'll call the first case of the morning, United States versus Germán Rodríguez-Clark. Looks like Ms. Race gets to go first.
Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Deborah Race, and I am here on behalf of Germán Clark, defendant appellant. I was actually appointed to represent Mr. Clark over 10 years ago in a 2255 based on Miller v. Alabama. The judge in this case actually appointed me. We were not successful. However, I got to know Mr. Clark, a bit about his story, and to appreciate the fact that the law that I'm arguing under now and the developing law applies to Mr. Clark. I've been doing this a long time, and I don't recall ever offering to help a defendant like this before. I am here pro bono on behalf of Mr. Clark. I feel like his motion for compassionate release should have been granted.
Well, thank you for your participation.
You're welcome, Your Honor. Mr. Clark filed a motion for compassionate release. I believe he showed extraordinary and compelling reasons. One of those was his extreme youth. Mr. Clark's birthday was actually October 7th, just a few short weeks before this crime was committed. He had just turned 15. As time has developed since Mr. Clark's sentencing, the courts, including the Supreme Court, the experts, psychologists, a whole slew of others have recognized that the juvenile mind is different. At barely 15, he was the youngest of these three involved in this crime. And I am not here to tell you this was not a horrific crime. Judge Gilstrap recognized that, as did the sentencing judge, Judge Folsom. But I think if you look at, and I'm going to get to a couple of other things regarding consistent with commission pronouncements, but the commission has recently also written that the sentencing policies established should reflect advancement in the knowledge of human behavior as it relates to criminal justice. They have also expressly stated that a downward departure may be warranted due to a defendant's youthfulness. They have recognized that youthful individuals are more impulsive, risk-seeking, susceptible to outside influences. I say this applies to Mr. Clark. As the court knows, in the facts of this case, this was a carjacking murder. Mr. Clark did not participate in the actual murder. He was in the car at the time. Both judges recognize that. So I don't disagree there. They recognize it.
Did he enter a guilty plea or did he go to trial?
He entered a guilty plea. And he also, Your Honor.
Did he testify or get a 5K or anything of that sort in connection with the guilty plea?
I don't recall specifically. I'll look at that. But I do know that when he was sentenced, he was remorseful. They talked at length. He was a 15-year-old kid, and they talked at length about how outstanding he was in the juvenile detention. I also would submit that we presented the judge with a lot of evidence of his rehabilitation. This man during prison has definitely made use of what was offered to him. He has obtained several degrees. He participates in the suicide watch program. He also participates in a mentorship program to help other troubled youth avoid this consequence. He knows now. He said at the time he regretted his involvement. The other point that I think demonstrates extraordinary and compelling reasons is Mr. Clark would have received a lesser sentence if he were sentenced today. There is a lot of debate in the briefs about my argument that the juvenile charge of indecent exposure should not have applied. Since these briefs were filed, the public defender has filed another motion on behalf of Mr. Clark for a reduction under the new laws. The government has acknowledged that his sentence would be less today. He would not get the 2 status points for being on probation. So the actual sentence that we're talking about in our brief and then in the other motion are the same, yet they filed an extensive opposition to his motion. In addition to having to show extraordinary and compelling reasons, we have to also show that this is consistent with the commission policy statements. It's more than consistent. The Sentencing Commission has issued several edicts and policy statements recognizing that the courts can consider rehabilitation. Is it alone enough? No, but these factors are considered in the aggregate. And in the aggregate—
Arguing that these collectively constitute a legal error or simply that they're persuasive and further support granting the compassionate relief?
I think there was a legal error, but not based on this. I think is this together, the court committed an error in considering them in isolation and not in the aggregate. The Sentencing Commission says that you have to consider all of the factors. And the other thing I think the district judge got wrong, and I'll get to that, but he basically said that the sentencing judge considered Mr. Clark's youth. That's an error right there, because the sentencing judge did not have the advantage of all of the law and all of the developments. And that is, again, the Sentencing Commission has instructed that we have to consider those. We have to consider the developments in the law. The whole point of this is to give someone a second look. And it's a second look today. You're looking at Mr. Clark today. What Judge Folsom saw when he saw that 15-year-old boy and the fact that he took into account his age can't change the fact Judge Folsom didn't have the benefit of all of this. He didn't have the benefit of the development of the psychological studies and the law and the Sentencing Commission and the Supreme Court and everything else. So I would submit to the court that, yes, there were legal errors made, but I also think overall it is that what the judge said, it is supportive of the compassionate release.
Thank you again for your commitment to your client. I was on the district court for 16 and a half years, and these are relatively rare where you, and it's somewhat rewarding when someone takes an advantage of an opportunity to improve themselves with education, vocational training, and so on, such as the record here reflects. But in the end, how can we, if the standard is an abuse of discretion, what would be your best argument that the district judge abused his discretion in denying this motion, wholly conceding that one or more of us may agree with you? Are we still within the realm of the district court's discretion? How do we address the standard?
I think you can get there, Your Honor, because I think where the court really failed was in the court's analysis of the 3553A factors. If you read the court's opinion, the court had 2 main things in his opinion. One was what I've already talked about, that the sentencing judge already considered his youth. And if you read the opinion, he says it over and over and over. That's not looking at the case as instructed now under the 3553A factors. The sentencing judge was physically impossible, mentally impossible from considering all of the developments in that law as instructed by the Sentencing Commission. Advancement in knowledge of human behavior. They expressly talk about surrounding youthful individuals, including recognition of the age crime curve. So I think the district judge, in his own opinion, tells you that he considered this, he denied this because Judge Folsom already considered Mr. Clark's youth. And he says he already considered his rehabilitation. That's impossible. I was asking the district judge to consider it today, not what Judge Folsom considered over 30 years ago. The district court wholly failed, in my opinion, to consider who he is today. He did comment on the good deeds he had done in prison and encouraged him to continue. But Mr. Clark, okay, first of all, he would be serving a lesser sentence. That's agreed. The government admits that. So if that's the case, then how can the second prong be true? The judge basically said, I can't lower this decision because it wouldn't reflect the seriousness of the crime, wouldn't deter others. I submit that the sheer fact everyone now agrees that his sentence would be less should satisfy that requirement. I don't know how it couldn't.
What is his anticipated release date? Assuming that there's no relief from this court, what would his release date be?
I think he would be 61 and he's, I think, 44. So I can, when I get up on rebuttal, I'll tell you, but I'm saying it's over 10 or 12 years, I think.
15 and 18 years, we would
say. Something like that. Yes, Your Honor. But I do think, again, the sheer fact that the court basically said it wouldn't support finding that this was a serious crime, it wouldn't deter others. I just don't see how that's possible. Mr. Clark has already served over 30 years. The average sentence for murder last year was around 24 years. So he served more. I don't accept the deterrence argument or the seriousness of the crime. Yes, it was serious. Nobody's denying that. But to me, my strongest argument, based on Your Honor's questions, would be that the district court failed to accurately consider the 3553A factors. I think of the three things that we are supposed to show, the compelling and extraordinary need for this relief, I think we've shown that. I think we've shown that it's all consistent with the policy statements by the Sentencing Commission. Then you get to the court's discretion. Court can override it with the 3553A factors. That's where I think he missed. He couldn't say that the district court considered Mr. Clark and all he's accomplished in his 30 years in prison. One other thing I would point out to you is what we attached to the court's to the motion in the district court. There were multiple letters from people within the prison system, including a Dr. Callis, who was the prison psychologist, who noted in there that he hasn't done anything like this, except one other time he wrote a letter on behalf of an inmate. He said he would have no problem with Mr. Clark being out. He feels like he has been rehabilitated, and he would be a good public citizen. I'm certainly not here to say, I believe Judge Folsom said he wouldn't be an old man when he was released. No, but right now he is at a point in time where I can see he could make a huge difference. He is already working towards mentoring young people to avoid his fate. He actually was originally, when I first was appointed to represent him, was in Santa Barbara County, which seems, if you're in prison, that seems pretty nice. He asked to be transferred to Terminal Island because they had a more aggressive suicide watch program and other things that he wanted to participate in. He actually was transferred to Beaumont, but he is now in Terminal Island. But again, Your Honors, I would just urge you, please, to look at this record. And I know that it rests with the sound discretion of the district judge, but I submit that in this case, I believe the judge abused his discretion.
Did the court have an evidentiary hearing in connection with the motion, or was it submitted on paper?
It was submitted on paper. Yes, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Rachel.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, Counsel Bradley Visosky for the government.
There's a lot of discussion in the briefs and in the argument this morning about Mr. Clark's youth at the time of this offense, and we certainly recognize that he was 15 years old. Just also point out that the victim here was 16 years old and did not have an opportunity for rehabilitation.
Also, let me ask you one of the things Ms. Race said, looking at Chief Judge Gilstrap's writings. In both the original order and the motion reconsideration order, he does talk about the youth. It's one reason I'm raising with you now. The youth and other such factors, related factors, were considered by the sentencing judge. To indicate he already got a lesser sentence, he already had the benefit of some of what you're now raising with me, counsel, for Mr. Clark. But isn't that at least some indication that Judge Gilstrap was not looking at the present status so much as saying, I'm not evaluating this, I'm finding that Judge Folsom evaluated this already, and I'm not reconsidering the 3553A factors?
I think he gave due deference to Judge Folsom's consideration, but I also think that Judge Gilstrap looked at it afresh, Your Honor. If you look at page in the record 659, Judge Gilstrap recognized youth, and he recognized, as counsel puts it, the developments in the law and the social science about youth, and he recognized that juveniles are different from adults. Juveniles lack impulse control. They're easily influenced by peer pressure, and they're more impetuous. I mean, I would submit that none of that is very revolutionary. I mean, from the beginning of time, people realized those types of things about juveniles, and Judge Folsom did as well. I mean, he said when he went into the sentencing, he dreaded doing it because of the horrific facts of the case. True, but also because of Mr. Clark, and that he was 15. And that weighed on him, and that's part of the reason he had a range of 360 months to life, and why he chose a sentence on the carjacking count of 540 months. So I don't think it's fair for Mr. Clark to say that either Judge Folsom or Judge Gilstrap did not consider youth. It was certainly addressed and recognized. But also, Mr. Clark points out, especially in his motion for reconsideration, and again in the briefing, that the amendments that were effective November 1st, 2023 should apply. But based on those amendments and the policy statement of 1B113, there is now a policy statement that addresses defendant filed motions when previously there wasn't. So you can't just say youth is an extraordinary and compelling reason in the abstract. You have to peg it to something in the policy statement, and Mr. Clark never does that. And I would submit that none of the subsections, it's 1B113, 1 through 6, address youth. They address the opposite of youth in subsection 2 of someone of advanced age at 65 years, but not only 65 years, but you also have to have a serious debilitating medical condition. Youth is not one of those factors. And it's also contrary to how this court has authoritatively construed the compassionate release statute in United States versus Escajeda. And there, the court explained that extraordinary compelling reasons have to be something, some sort of severe exigency that was not foreseeable, not known at the time of sentencing. And of course, Mr. Clark's youth was a fact that was known at the time of sentencing. And another case that this court joined in Escajeda, United States versus Hunter. It's a Sixth Circuit case. It also dealt with this issue of youth as a potential extraordinarily compelling reason. And there the Sixth Circuit found that the district court had erred in finding that the facts that existed at sentencing, there one of those facts was the defendant's relative youth was an error. So the district court recognized youth all over the place. And so one of the other so-called changes in the law that Mr. Clark raises, and we have to distinguish between what counsel pointed out in his recent 3582C2 motion based on the so-called status points amendment. And yes, that has recently been briefed by both parties in the district court. It's not an issue in this appeal, and there we do concede. I mean, it's clear that he's eligible under the status points amendment, but we do argue that the court should exercise its discretion along the lines that it did in its order below, based on the 3553A factors, and it should deny relief. But as for the so-called change in the law that is briefed in this appeal, that involves the indecent exposure conviction, and we're arguing about one point in the criminal history calculation. And in 1994, the guideline is exactly the same as it is today, and that's 4A1.2D2B, where you add a point for each adult or juvenile sentence imposed within 5 years of the defendant's commencement of the instant offense. And the indecent exposure conviction occurred in 1993, the same year that this murder occurred. So there is no change there. And then Mr. Clark points to 4A1.2C1, and there is debate in the briefing of whether indecent exposure falls within the listed offenses. Just assuming for the sake of argument that it does, at the time of sentencing, the applicable guideline said that sentences for the following prior offenses, and this is 4A1.2C1, sentences for the prior offenses and offenses similar to them by whatever name they are known are counted only if A, the sentence was a term of probation of at least 1 year. And here it's clear, it's undisputed that Mr. Clark's indecent exposure conviction was for, or his sentence was for probation for a year. So there's no dispute that the sentence was correctly calculated. What Mr. Clark points to is a 2007 amendment that changes that language of at least 1 year to a year or more. But the problem for him is that amendment was not made retroactive. If you look in 1B1.10D, Amendment 709, which made that change, is not found there. And by the way, in the current guideline, the current policy statement, 1B1.13B6, it expressly says that a non-retroactive amendment to the guidelines manual does not count as an extraordinary and compelling reason. And so even under the current guidelines, that cannot count as an extraordinary and compelling reason. And so what we're left with at the end of the day, and Judge Gilstrap, again, he had a thorough 18-page order. He didn't brush it off when Mr. Clark filed a motion for reconsideration some number of months later. He again issued a thoughtful order on the reconsideration. But going back to his original order, he assumed, he said, even taking as true Clark's assertion that he would have received a lower sentence if sentenced today, the court remains persuaded that the controlling 3553A factors weigh against compassionate release. And this court has said over and over again in cases like Chambliss and Thompson, and most recently in the Jean case, which is a subject of dispute, but even the panel majority in Jean recognize that where a district court thoroughly engages the arguments, evaluates them, and comes to a decision, this court gives wide latitude to the district court's discretion. And under circumstances here, it's virtually, it would seem unchallengeable because Judge Gilstrap considered everything that the parties presented to him. You know, he too knew that, you know, this was a 15-year-old kid that had made remarkable strides in prison. And there's no, you know, we say this in briefs, you know, his an inmate's behavior in prison, though commendable. You know, we don't say that lightly, at least I don't when I write those, that it truly is impressive that someone looking at this sort of bleak future changes their life around, and their victory is won, and God bless them. But we believe that Judge Gilstrap was correct here and certainly did not abuse his discretion, that given the seriousness of this crime, the sentence was appropriate, And he should serve it, taking everything into consideration. He has to look at the respect for the law, the seriousness of the crime, to protect society, and for just just punishment.
Are you in effect saying Judge Gilstrap could have gone either way?
I'm sorry?
Are you saying Judge Gilstrap could have gone either way without being reversed?
I don't think so on the extraordinary and compelling calculus, Your Honor, because I don't see, there has to be some gateway under the compassionate release statute to even consider rehabilitation, given Congress's command that rehabilitation alone can't be an extraordinary and compelling reason. And I don't see here how he would get there. You know, you take youth, and as I talked about, youth is not under the current policy statement, and it, in fact, never has been an extraordinary and compelling reason. You look at the changes of the in the law under the current guideline, as I explained earlier, because it's a non-retroactive guideline amendment, it is not an extraordinary and compelling reason per the Sentencing Commission. Now, what he could do is in the current 3582C2 motion, because that gateway's there now, because Mr. Clark is eligible under the status points amendment. So now it's up to Judge Gilstrap to evaluate the 3553A factors. And yes, in that circumstance, he could, Your Honor, but not based on the facts as presented in this appeal.
Anything else for us?
Thank you, Your Honors. Appreciate it.
Your Honors, just a couple of things.
Let me ask you, do you agree with one of the comments government counsel just made, that the district judge did consider everything in one of his two opinions that was presented to him? It's not that he overlooked something or disagreeing with how he evaluated it, or did he fail to address some particular piece of evidence, for example, that you presented to him?
I think he failed to address Mr. Clark's youth. He acknowledged his youth.
So you know, I mean, he certainly talked about it a lot. You said he talked about it in the wrong terms.
What he said was, if you look even at his conclusion, he basically says that the sentencing court considered his youth. He says in his conclusion that he has not demonstrated extraordinary and compelling reasons, and that even assuming he would, counsel read that he would have a different sentence today, the sentencing court already considered those reasons. It already took into account his rehabilitation. My point is, Judge Gilstrap, nowhere in his opinion, yes, he says this all has occurred, these changes have occurred, but nowhere in his opinion does he really analyze Mr. Clark's youth in light of today's developments. And all of that is what the Sentencing Commission says he should do. I would also like to point out that counsel says in the new motion that's still pending before Judge Gilstrap, they concede that he would be entitled to relief. However, in their response, they argue the exact same reasons that Mr. Clark should not get that relief. They say the 3553A factors don't support it. And that's what I argue does support it. I just don't think Judge Gilstrap, I think if you read his opinion, I don't think he's considering all of this in light of the present day. And it's not that I disagree with what his final decision is, but to say that Mr. Clark, that sentencing judge considered his, took his youth into account and sentenced him accordingly is apples and oranges from today's developments. And the Sentencing Commission, one of the other comments made, was that there's nothing in there about youth. 5H1.1 says a downward departure may be warranted due to the defendant's youthfulness at the time of the offense or prior offenses. All of the offenses in Mr. Clark's sentence occurred when he was 15 or younger. There was a lot in the brief of my argument and their response that the indecent exposure should not even have been included. If that wasn't included, then not only does that point fall off, the other two for probation fall off. But now, and I understand what he's saying, he's saying we've got different motions. That's true, but the reality is Mr. Clark was entitled and is entitled to a lesser sentence. They agree he's eligible for the other relief, but they want it denied for the very same reasons. And for the reasons I'm here today, I'll be back if that's what happens, Your Honors. I would just encourage you to read Judge Gilstrap's opinion carefully in light of the current law and rule that he abused his discretion, and I would welcome an evidentiary hearing if he would hold one for Mr. Clark. For those reasons, we would ask that this court reverse the decision of Judge Gilstrap. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Thanks to both of you. It's commendable you're handling this pro bono, and we thank you for your help. We'll take the case.